White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 244.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we had a little football game last night that we have to come on and talk about real quick. This will hopefully be a fairly abbreviated show. We're just going to talk about the Sugar Bowl, Auburn versus Oklahoma. Game did not go the way we might have wanted it to go. What were your thoughts about that game going in? Well, we talked about our thoughts going in, and then how did reality meet your anticipations and expectations?
I mean, I think I had a fairly good idea that, you know, Oklahoma's offense is excellent. They're great, and they have a lot of talent, and I knew they were going to score about 30 points, and we were going to have to score, you mm-hmm. know, 30 points to win the game. And when everyone was healthy, Sean White, Petway, carry on everybody, then it seemed like that was possible. The opening drive of the game, it seemed like that was possible. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as Sean White got hurt, that possibility seemed to evaporate pretty quickly.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's exactly what we talked about in the days leading up to that game, was that at our best, we could beat them. But we would have to be at our best. And we knew that if we were not at our best, it was going to be a pretty tough sledding. It's interesting, if you look at the scores, we actually spread our scores out across first, second, and fourth quarter. The third quarter is what killed us, though. If you drop the third quarter out, if we could just not play third quarters at Auburn, then it's only a one-point game. But unfortunately, they did play the third quarter. Oklahoma scored two touchdowns pretty quickly in that quarter on us to win 35 to essentially what should have been 20. So basically a two-touchdown win. The score looks worse. But I think the difference in the game from my standpoint was quarterback, obviously, because while we had terrible, terrible luck at quarterback, and we've had it all year, they had one of the more impressive quarterback performances I believe I've ever seen. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks that our defensive line had to chase for two or three quarters to finally sack, but I don't think they ever got him, did they?
Not a real sack, no.
No, they never got him down. Boston
knocked him down one time and got a penalty.
Good.
But he completed the pass on that play.
Yeah. So, he completed the pass on every one of those plays, just about, it seemed like. Oh, man.
This is the difference between him and other great quarterbacks we've seen recently, is his ability to move around and buy time but still keep his head pointed downfield and know where everybody was, offense and defense, on the field, and then just put the ball in exactly the right spot was very impressive.
It was.
He broke the record for quarterback rating this season.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had a higher quarterback rating than anybody that's ever played college football in a season. And you could see it in that game. He was really, really on. He was really accurate. And it was like his jersey was greased. We could not get him down.
No. No. And their running backs, too, were very elusive. I mean, there was one play where one of their running backs sidestepped to the left and took off upfield again, and three of our guys kind of collided with each other and went down trying to get him. Mm-hmm. And none of them laid a finger on him.
No, I mean, before we were talking about the previous show, I said they were like Ole Miss's passing game and LSU's running game. Mm. But, you know, and LSU is the only team I've seen that has two running backs like that. I mean, those guys are way better than the two Georgia running backs that we played against.
Mm-hmm.
They were very impressive. But, you know, and Westbrook, I think, was the best receiver we've seen this year. He was excellent. I mean, he abused us. And that other guy was like 6'5". So, some of that is what it was. Like, they have a great offense, and they're going to score points regardless, and you just have to score points to keep up. And they were vulnerable to teams that could throw the ball, and we couldn't throw the ball. So,
no, that's it. And we started out sort of being able to throw the ball. The way that I saw it was, I mean, even in the first drive when Sean was completing passes to Eli Stove, they were still low and behind Stove, and Stove had to turn around and dive backwards and pick them off the ground before they hit the ground. So, you know, even on that opening drive where we did move down the field and put it in the end zone finally, which we've done, it seems like, in every game, is score on that first drive and then struggle after that, with the exception of the middle of the season where we were rolling. Sean never looked great to me. I mean, I know he got infinitely worse after he, obviously, in retrospect, we know, broke his arm, for crying out loud. But, and there's yet more rumor and speculation floating around about that, which you can just go find out for yourself, folks, if you want to know. The conspiracy theories about Sean White are more than like 9/11. It's amazing. But anyway, on his opening drive, I still didn't think he looked great. He just didn't look horrible. And then, of course, after that, it was nothing, and they brought the defense up, and we couldn't run, and that, you know, that pretty much brought everything to a grinding halt. I was shocked at how bad of a game Kerryon Johnson had.
Yeah, he did not look good.
No, he lost yards a lot of the time. I thought that was a defense we were supposed to be able to do some things against.
But, I mean, you have to be able to throw the ball, over their head. That's their – I mean, they're 120th in the country or something against teams passing the ball. And you have to be able to pass the ball to make them back off. And once they knew that we couldn't do that, then it didn't matter. Like, the safeties and the guys covering the slot receivers were just running at the running back from the minute we snapped the ball. And they couldn't get away from them.
Well, you know, the question that's for – I know I'm deviating slightly from the script, but I just want to ask – I've been wanting to ask you this, and you can deal with it or move on or ignore it or whatever, but how much of the problem we saw last night can be cured with a new quarterback, and how much of it is endemic?
Well, that's the $64,000 question for next season. I mean
– okay.
I'll say this, 95% of it could be cured with a really good quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we had, Sean White, who is, good but not great. He's solid. He's productive when he's healthy, but he can't stay healthy. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And John Franklin III, who is apparently not transferring, but – in my opinion, cannot be effective. I haven't seen anything that makes me think he can be effective as an SEC starting quarterback. So,
He had three completions when he was playing for 25 yards and looked better than Sean, I thought, throwing the ball when he was in. I mean, am I crazy, or did John Franklin III look better throwing the ball? People are telling me I was crazy, but I saw him deliver the ball out in the flat and out in the 10-yard out very crisply.
He threw a couple of short passes that were close, and then he threw one deep pass that was like 5 yards away from the guy.
Yeah.
And then he hurt his hand or whatever, and then he was out of the game. So, and then we played Jeremy, who apparently hadn't even practiced. So.
And still did better than anybody else, pretty much. I mean, Jeremy completed more passes than anybody else on the team for more yards by far than anybody else on the team. If you knew it was going to end with an interception. The only question was what yard line would we be on when he threw it,
Sure.
Just knew it. You knew that interception was coming. You could just feel it. Gosh. Well, so what did you think about the defense? Was it just worn out from having to be in so much? Was it like the Georgia game, you know, again, where the offense could never get off, could never stay on the field? And the, what did you say?
There's two parts to this. One is, yes, after a certain point, the defense was tired of chasing and ran or trying to stop them when the offense was going three and out every time. But the other part was, you know, I think the defense played hard. I think part of some people watch that game, they go, wow, Oklahoma made us look bad. Oklahoma is great. Okay. To me, it's like Clemson and Oklahoma are the two best offenses of college football, and nobody else is really particularly close. So they can run, they can throw, they can throw deep, they can throw short, and they can super accurate. The quarterback can run the ball. I mean, they have two NFL running backs and a really, you know, an all-American kind of wide receiver. So that, I mean, that's a great offense. So I think the defense played okay. I thought, you know, there was a lot of plays when they should have finished and sacked the quarterback. And I think Jeff Holland in particular had a terrible game. And I thought Lawson played well, but he left some plays on the field too. I think psychologically as a whole, when Sean White went to the locker room, the whole team was like, "Well, that's it, we're screwed."
Yeah.
I mean, I think clear, you and I sitting at home knew it, mm-hmm. and so you don't think they knew it? And you sure they knew it? So I think they played hard. I think also the other thing that I saw was, there was an enormous amount of trash talking in this game.
Yeah, there was.
And it was a lot of that crap. And I think I think that combined with the inability to tackle them well got in our defense's heads, and they were kind of playing out of control a little bit after, you know, at a certain point in the game where they were just kind of going crazy trying to get him and sack him and stuff. And so guys were maybe leaving their lanes and that kind of stuff, and not playing disciplined football. But you know, some of that was like, I thought Oklahoma was going to score 35 points in the game, and Auburn was just going to have to score that many or more. I didn't think we were ever going to hold them to 20 or 15 or anything. I mean, so, you know, I thought the defense played okay. It clearly wasn't their best game, but I think it, you know, you look at that and go, man, that was a lot. But I think that was like Oklahoma's, you know, third lowest output of the season in points and yards. So that's the kind of offense they have. They put up 40, 50 points on most teams. So, you know, they didn't have a great game. You know, coverage was okay. You know, losing Reedy Ford hurt, I think, at the nickelback, yeah, because he's a veteran there and he's been in a lot of these big games and he knows how to deal with stuff. I think that hurt us. And so, you know, the defensive line, I thought we, you know, we were kind of out of control in the pass rush. Like we should have treated him more like we treated Deshaun Watson in terms of trying to contain him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think too often we kind of rushed like blindly up the field, and then he kind of slipped into those open spaces and made a play. So
he was very slick. I was very impressed with how elusive that guy was. I mean, you know, we talked about he's accurate, certainly, but part of being accurate is not being tackled before you can deliver that perfect pass on target. And he's got both of those things. He's very, very elusive in the outside the pocket particularly. And then he's very precise. He's like if Sean White had a little more, if a really healthy Sean White also had a slightly more athletic body under him, you know.
Well, he's not like a Damian Craig or Johnny Manziel, where he's like super athletic and he's just out there running away from people and kind of, you know, doing this backyard football thing. He's almost kind of silky smooth back there, the way he just kind of slides in between people and steps away from your hand and completes the pass and stuff. That's kind of what I saw.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. So we talked about the quarterbacks, the passing game, the defense. Anything else, either phase of the game? I mean, I'm kind of looking at the box score here, and
two things I want to talk about. One is the decision to not go for it on fourth down. I thought was the one. If you want to criticize Gus for anything in the game, that's the one decision where I have no problem with it. It was like fourth and a foot. I think we got a terrible spot. Mm-hmm. I rewatched it like three times, and I thought we got a really crappy spot on that play. And I thought the officials as a whole had a bad game in terms of Auburn, but that play, like, it was fourth and a foot. They had just driven down and missed the field goal, but their offense was clearly heating up, and we were kind of lucky to get the missed field goal.
Yeah.
And our offense, when Sean was out of the game, our offense was really floundering around, and we needed to keep the defense off the field. And basically, at that point, like, their offense was better than our offense. We needed to steal possessions from them. Mm-hmm. So we were going to have to either go for it on fourth down or fake some punts or onside kick or, like, score an onside kick or something to have a chance to win the game. We weren't going to beat them in any kind of conventional way where we just play straight-up offense and defense, because they weren't – you know, they sort of weren't going to go on some streak where they turned the ball over three times or something. So that I really felt like Gus should have gone for it, and he didn't, and that's what it is. So.
Well, that just is more of what we've talked about before, that Gus has gotten more and more conservative over the over the years. And, I mean, there's no riverboat gambler left in him like there was in Tuberville to the very end. Gus just sort of plays those very conservative percentages, you know. And, yeah, I thought that I understood why he punted, and I got it, but I do think it was an opportunity there that we should have tried to make the most of. We could have found a way to get a yard.
I'm sorry. Put Kerryon in the Wildcat and get a yard, or hand it to Petway and get a yard. I don't care. But but my thing is, like, if you punt, you're saying, you know, I think our defense can stop them and our offense can, you know, get the ball and roll down the field and score. And I didn't think either one of those things was going to happen. So,
yeah, but that's exactly right. We needed to manufacture points. We needed to manufacture offense and possessions, and playing a straight up conservative tit for tat game just was not going to work once we didn't have Sean anymore.
That's right. I mean, one of the simple things about football is when you play a team that's like that, at some point it's clear they're better than you, then you have to take chances to win.
Yeah.
You have to risk things. You have to do, you know, onside kicks and fake punts and go for a fourth down. You can't just play straight up against a team that's better than you and think like, oh, we're going to win. And I thought we got to the point in the game where, especially the way our offense was, where we had to do that kind of stuff. So it bothered me that he, because the other part is, I think sometimes when you go for it, you can give the team a spark. And when you go for it to make it, you can give the team a spark of like, hey, we're pulling out the stops here, trying to do something.
Yeah. What did you have about the last drive? You had a note here.
We drove down the field and called timeouts at the end to score a touchdown. Like, it was like, I don't know. I mean, I got it in the sense that maybe they were trying to get Jeremy a score, like, because he was a senior and they wanted to go out. Like, I would have been fine with handing Jeremy the ball, let him try and run in at the end or whatever. But then we put Kerryon in, or like, we called two timeouts at the end of the game. Everybody was basically waiting to walk in the locker room. And we weren't, like, my thing is, like, if you, I don't know, like, if it's so important to score then that it's really important to score earlier, do you need to take more chances to score earlier? That's so.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, this is the part that bothered me, though, is that Oklahoma called timeout a couple of seconds earlier in that drive for a defensive timeout. And then when we call timeout, the Oklahoma fans are all booing. I'm like, okay, so if we call a timeout, it's a horrible, horrible thing, and you're going to boo us, which I've never in my life heard of people disapproving of a team trying to score in a football game. Sense to me. But why were they booing us for calling a timeout when they called a timeout right before that?
Because, I mean, we were trying to score, but the game was over. We weren't going to win.
Well, then why did they call timeout if the game was over and they're just trying to get off the field? They called timeout.
Because we were still playing. We were still throwing the ball down the field trying to score.
Okay, why shouldn't we have done that? Isn't that the point?
The point is to try to win.
Okay, why are they calling timeout if it doesn't mean anything and it doesn't matter? Why is it okay for them to call timeout and not okay for us to call timeout?
I'm not saying it's not okay for both teams to call timeout. I mean, the Oklahoma fans were stupid. But what I'm saying is, how would you feel if Kerryon Johnson broke his leg on that play? The fourth round throw the ball in the end zone play.
He's trying to score a touchdown in the Sugar Bowl.
But you're not going to win. The only thing that, to me, like, I don't care if we – this is my thing, like, about that play, I guess, is I don't care if we lose 100 to nothing.
Okay,
we lose 50 to 49.
Well, you know what? I guess I do.
I was
more concerned about Carl Lawson being in at that point than I was somebody that's a running back trying to score. I had flashbacks to Tracy Rocker, okay? I was concerned about the defensive lineman being out there in the fourth quarter and the game is essentially done. But as far as the offense, I wanted them to go for two and then do an onside kick if they had enough time. You're dang right I did. If the final score had been 35-28, I'd have felt better about it than 35-19, and I sure feel better about it than I would if it had been 35-13. You're damn right. Score every chance you get. I was mad they couldn't go for two.
I mean, I get that, but to me it's like...
bunch of jerks booing. Give me a break. You don't want people calling timeout. Don't call timeout yourself. How you like that, Sooners? Give me a break. It just makes me sick. I was pissed about that all last night. Anything else that we want to talk about? This is what I was trying to get at a second ago. Is that in rushing, we ended up with 185. They had 228. So they even outrushed us. But that was mostly in the fourth quarter. They kind of started getting some longer runs on us. Up until then, it was fairly even. And I thought Petway was having a pretty good game, at least in the first half, when they weren't stacking the box. But did you notice that several of our receivers, let's see, Davis got a catch, Nate Craig Myers got a catch, Darius Slayton had a 56-yard catch. Eli Stove got several catches. And all three of the phenoms, Davis, Craig Myers, and Johnson, all got a catch.
Stove.
Yeah. And even Will Hastings got a little 3-yard, which I thought was a bad spot, too. A lot of bad spots going on. So we really did spread the ball around a lot in that game.
We did, and I was happy to see that. And again, like in response to your earlier question, like I don't think there is something systematically broken with this offense. I think a good quarterback that can throw the ball down the field, that can stay healthy, and can move and run a little bit, I think we're going to be fine. We're going to score a lot of points.
That first quarter, our offense looked pretty sharp. When Sean was throwing the ball in the very first drive when we scored, our receivers were open.
Sure. I think our receivers were open the whole game. I just think we couldn't get them the ball.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we'll see. I think next year obviously is going to be a very big year for this staff. But they've got some tools now. They ought to be able to put something together. So we'll see. I've been tiptoeing around it, but everything I've been reading since last night, I'm just pretty down. I'm pretty bummed on everything. I'm just pretty much like, it's like the whole crowd that got quiet during our 6-game win streak and then got loud again after Georgia and Alabama. They've all gotten loud again, and it's the same old rehash and the same old thing, and people want me to go over the same ground I'm going over 8,000 times, and I'm just tired, you know? I'm just weary of it. I'm just about fed up.
Because we're going to have a looking back and looking forward podcast coming up soon where we go deep into that again. So.
And don't forget, we've also got the Wishbone Awards for this year. This will be like our, let's see, we did them in beginning of 13, 14, 15. This will be our fourth or fifth, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. Important things like best name and stuff like that. Absolutely. Those questions have to be answered. Another question we have to answer is, why is my microphone messed up tonight? We've been working on this for half an hour. If our audio sounds bad tonight compared to usual, I apologize, but we're having some kind of weird... our show is absolutely snake bit. We are absolutely snake bit. We cannot get a consistent quality out of our technical equipment three shows in a row, and it drives me up the wall. I have a brand new computer. Everything is new, and yet we just cannot get consistent audio quality, and I'm trying. It's driving me nuts, and I'm sorry. But anyway, speaking of other questions we have to answer, we have some listener questions. What we got?
Oh, no Sam?
No, I didn't bring Sam more tonight. That's not for a quick Sugar Bowl show.
All right. First question comes from Auburn Elvis, and he says, kind of following up on something you were saying, what is the mindset of these fair weather fans? Seriously, what is their realistic solution? Is Kevin Steele secretly this awesome head coach and no one ever bothered to offer him a big-time job before? Is there some sexy coach out there that once hired half of Alabama's 4 and 5 stars are going to commit to us?
Yeah, and you know what else? I don't know if I said this previously, but we ended up 8 and 5, right? So, by the way, some of you will take note that Nick Saban still hasn't beaten a 9-win Auburn team, a 9 or better win Auburn team. Some people are saying that's good news. That's the bright silver lining. I'm like, that's not good. I wanted to win this game. I wanted to break that streak and be 9. Over in the modern era, you and I start the modern era in 1981 with Pat Dye. In the modern era, what is Auburn's average win total? Take every season. Yeah, about 8.4, 8.5. So, for what it's worth.
All right. Next question comes from Carl Von Drunker, who's what about Malik Willis, who's the quarterback who committed to us last week? How many quarterbacks are we going to have on this roster? It's getting silly at this point.
It is.
And he says, all the quarterbacks.
We do. We must have all your quarterbacks and belong to us. That's right. Alabama's got one because all the others left, but he's magically invulnerable and can never be hurt. We'll see what happens on Monday. Yeah, I know. How many do we need? I mean, one of them, at least two of them we know probably won't even be playing next year, right, even though they'll be on scholarship. We doubt Franklin will be playing much, and we doubt that as a quarterback. And what's Elbow? I'm just going to call him Elbow.
Tyler Queen,
I think he's the mascot. God bless him, and I'm sure he's a fine young man. And I mean, no disrespect to him or his family. But from a team football standpoint, he's basically getting a free scholarship. He should be in the Aubie suit. I'm sorry. I mean, Aubie should be his friend. There's no
spoiling it for people.
I'm sorry. Mira, don't listen to this episode. Okay.
All right. Our next question.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I'm still recovering from that.
I'm sorry.
Okay. If...
I don't have the soundboard, John. You're just going to have to sit here in silence until you're ready to talk.
Here we go. Jared Graves says, if Auburn struggles on offense with Stidham at quarterback, will Gust make it through the 17th season?
Yeah, but not past the day after the Iron Bowl.
No, I think if you're right. If Stidham is healthy all year and they have real problems on offense, then Gus is getting in trouble. So
I don't see any circumstances under which we pull a Les Miles.
No,
that's not us. That's not our style. Terry left of his own volition. He didn't get fired. I mean, he knew they were going to fire him. He's like, well, if you're going to fire me, I'm just gonna walk out the door now because I'm Terry Bowden, and he went out. But I mean, you know, Gus isn't going to do that. So they'd go to the end of the season and then do a Tuberville. He would be Tuberville. That's what would happen.
Dan in North Carolina says, how badly did y'all feel not only for Sean White but for the team as a whole with him getting injured again in a big game?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and that gets us back to the 9/11 stuff. But I don't want to go there. Yeah, I mean, he just can't catch a break. He's as snake bit as the technical stuff in our podcast.
He is snake bit, but it's also a little bit – I mean, I don't want to be mean, but it's a little bit predictable.
Oh, yeah.
I think we said this when he was the Auburn. And so I – but also I think, like, the best case scenario for him and for Auburn is if he's the backup quarterback and yeah. Stidham is healthy and plays. Because Sean White could be great for a game mm-hmm. or a half or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he would be great in that role. And he wouldn't have to be able to take the pounding for 6 weeks in a row, which he can't do. So I think it actually – I mean, to me, it's a scenario that makes the most sense for everybody.
Let me just say that I'm not going to go into any specifics at all, but the 9/11, the conspiracy stuff on him involves various chronic illnesses that have been made worse since high school and that perhaps he will never fully regain his original form. We'll see. Of course, I've also heard everything from he's a South American drug dealer to, you know, he's secretly the Pope to he's a space alien. So, I mean, you know, who knows?
Sometimes things are complicated and sometimes things are not. Okay.
Right,
and
right.
This is one of those things. He's like a 180-pound guy playing quarterback in the SEC in an there offense where he runs the ball and he runs violently, like mm-hmm. with no restraint or regard for his body. Mm-hmm. You will see, you know, 210-pound running backs in the SEC who will cower away from the hits, and Sean White dives forward. And so it's one of his best qualities, but it's also one of his worst qualities because he puts himself – his body cannot take it. There are too many, you know, guys in this league who are going to play at the NFL who absolutely annihilate you on, you know, when you're running the ball at that size. And so it, you know, you literally a guy that size can't take the pounding that he takes. It's not physically possible. So I don't. I mean, to me, people can say whatever they want. I think it's not complicated to see like the hits that he took in that game last night. How he got hurt. So, you know, I think the best – I mean, if Sean White wants to play every day, then he needs to go, you know, like you said at the beginning, go down and play 1AA or some much smaller level of football.
Yeah.
And be healthy. And if he wants to stay at Auburn, I think the best case scenario for him is that Stidham becomes the starter and plays every day, and Sean White is the backup, and he comes in. He can play in the blowout game, you know, the mm-hmm. teams we're going to kill, or he can be the backup, and when Stidham gets banged up, he can come out and play a game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Hey, I think I can formulate my larger point now. It kind of came to me, and we'll talk about this much more going forward, but I'm just going to lay this out there for people to think about. I've said before what my agenda is, right? I have this not hidden, totally open agenda that I love Gus's offense, and I love Auburn football under Gus, and that's what I want to continue and be successful. Well, I started thinking about it last night, a little bit this morning, and I realized there's a flip side to that. And that is when Gus's offense is no longer Gus's offense, when he's no longer doing or able to do the things that I like, if it becomes just a liability, then I'm really not losing anything if he's not around, okay? So I still hope everything works out for the best, and I want his offense to work, and I want to have the good side of the coin. But we're not going to fire him if everything is working and he is running the offense we love, you know. If it's going to be because it's not working anymore and it's not good. And by the way, let me just also add, I sure don't want Chip Kelly because he's everything bad that you could think of about Gus's offense, but worse. Plus, we beat him the one time we played him. So,
you brought him up. You're going to hear that name.
I have no interest whatsoever in Chip Kelly.
I understand that, but every college team, you know, other than Alabama, is going to hear Chip Kelly's name. Everyone.
Good luck with him.
So, all right, go a couple more questions, and then we're done here.
Okay.
Daniel Henry says, looking ahead from the Sugar Bowl the next year, with Stidham and the JUCO tight end Salvatore coming in, the depth on defense even after departures, the youth and folks coming back on offense, a receiver, he's really asking, what are your expectations for next year, and how many wins does Gus needs to keep his job and quiet the critics?
Right. Well, it's not a number. I mean, any Auburn coach needs to consistently win 8 games or more, but he needs to freaking beat Georgia. And that's bad because the last 2 or 3 years they've been beatable and they're actually recruiting really well now and they're bringing back their running backs, and their quarterback's coming back, and they're going to be better next year than they were this year. So we have to be even better than that. you know, if we played Georgia in like week one or two, we'd have a lot better record against them than playing them at the end. We're always banged up, and they're somehow miraculously all coming back from injury the week they play us, you know? We've talked about that a million times. So I think
you fit on the key point. Like, that's number – like, more than a win total, beating Georgia is number one on the list to me for next year.
Right.
But I – like – to me, like, we improved from last year to this year, needs to improve again.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it's entirely possible with steady quarterback play. With everything else coming back, with steady quarterback play, it's entirely possible. We can beat Georgia. We could beat A&M because we always win in College Station, lose at home to them. So that's two wins we should be able to pick up if we somehow don't lose anything else. Yeah, we could have a 10-win season in the regular season. I wanted to point out, somebody was saying we have to beat Alabama. I don't think we should have to. I don't think you fire your coach if you can't beat Alabama. Because I said, you know what? If you fire every coach in the country in Division I that cannot beat Alabama, you've solved the whole need to expand the playoffs past four teams.
Well,
you get it? You get what I'm saying?
I get it, but it's like that thing would be it's at home next year. We had, you'd be ready to play that game and give them everything they want.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, give them a game and maybe we can pull one out too.
No.
Next,
Georgia's number one on the list.
Next person that physically comes up to me and says, well, Auburn wouldn't have even, you know, Gus wouldn't have even beat Alabama except for a miracle play, I'm punch him in the face.
All right. Last question. Theodore Roosevelt says, what do you think is the best Auburn offense, defense, and special teams of all time?
I wish he asked a question from Coach Snyder, because I'm sure they were old buddies back in the day, drinking buddies.
So I kind of want to save this question for a future podcast. I want you to think about it.
Tell it right by us again. I was talking about Teddy Roosevelt and Coach Snyder.
The best offense, defense, and special teams of all time. So they can be from different teams. So, like, a certain year's offense, a certain year's defense, a certain year's special teams.
Yeah. I think it's fairly obvious, but we can say, hang on to it.
You can go now.
Well, my first reaction is to, you know, I think that the 2010's defense was terrible at pass defense, but, man, Nick Fairley made up for a lot of sins. But probably the two best defenses in modern Auburn history were 1988, which you love, and 2004, right?
Yes.
100%. Okay. Which would win, 88 or 04 in defense, in a defense off? If they had a defense off, like Star Lord and Guardians of the Galaxy. It's tough, isn't it?
It's tough.
Man, that 88 defensive line, baby. That defensive front.
1988 defense.
That 3-4, that three-man, that three-man front. Woo.
I love the 1988 defense. I mean, 2004 was great, and we had a lot of great players, and you know, all over the field. And Carlos Rogers was great. I mean, covered the best receivers, took him out, and so. But I mean, in my heart, I'll always go 1988.
Yeah. Offense. There's several to think about. You know, I mean, I wish that Damian had a running game. But
but they scored a zillion points. I mean,
they did. They had no running game at all, though.
No. So I mean, 2010.
Yeah, 10 is tough to beat. I think 10 was better than
93 or.
Yeah, 93 was very balanced. That 93 offense with with Stan White, with Bostic and Davis. And the receivers. Yeah, but man, it's hard to go against Mr. First Down Cam Newton though. That 2010 offense, I think, was something special. And special teams, we've had good special teams almost every year for 20 years or more.
But some years, this is a point I want to get back to about this team when we talk about the future is, like, we were really good at kicker, and punter was pretty good, but, like, our kick returns and punt returns this year were poor.
Yeah,
that's true. We didn't make one big play, like maybe one play all season on punt returns or kick returns.
Yeah.
And they, like in 2010, around then, we had the best kickoff returns in the country. Mm. We were consistently getting like 40 yards turning the ball back. Mm. And so I think that's something where, you know, maybe I'd pick those teams because of the kicker and the kick returns. But that, there's some Auburn teams in the past I know that had excellent kickers and kick returns, so to think about that one.
That 2010 team, though, they also had trouble fumbling the punts.
No, you got that right.
So it's, there's always, you know, the dark lining and the silver lining to it. So, yeah. Well, anything you want to talk about from the bowl games? I mean, there really wasn't a lot to, you know, the SEC didn't do great. LSU hammered Louisville. That was pretty entertaining. Florida beat Iowa. Who cares? It was boring. What you got?
Go ahead.
I bet Virginia Tech, you turned around and decided you should have turned. You should have driven down there after all, huh?
No, it was nasty and rainy that day. I mean, of course, we wish we had been there, but it would have been an unpleasant day, I think, to be in Charlotte. But it was fun because Arkansas was after the big lead. I think it was 24 to nothing.
Yeah, it was 24 to nothing at halftime.
35-24.
So. Absolutely. Tale of two halves. It looked like that Oregon bowl game from a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Man. The news tonight is that Stanton Truitt is transferring.
Yeah, I had a note here and then I lost it. It rolled off the top of the page. But do we know where he's going?
No, I think he's looking.
Well, I hate it, man, because he's a diverse player. He was a decent little scat running back, and he's a decent little receiver. I mean, I wonder what's up.
It's not hard to look at the depth chart, man. I mean, you look at the team like that's coming back and the running backs that are coming in next year.
Petway and Kerryon Johnson. Who else we got?
Cam Martin, Malik Miller.
Well, Malik Miller, that's true, yeah.
And I think we redshirted a guy this year, and we got two running backs coming in next year.
Alaric. Right?
Alaric. And we got the Octavian guy.
We've got Rome and the Barbarians coming in. I want to tell Alaric that, like, you know, let's see, what city are we going to next year? When he's a sophomore and we go back to Athens, I'll say, Alaric, it's Athens, it's the Greeks, come on. Pillage, my boy, pillage. All right, well. The other one was Coach Snyder won. He didn't even know he had a game, and he found out, remember, when he was on our show, and he won. So he beat Texas A&M. Last thing, what do you think about A&M? I mean, are they going to – what is the deal with them?
I mean, they have talent, but they're losing – again, they're losing a ton of talent this year. And the quarterback's gone. You know, Myles Garrett's gone. I see some of the receivers are gone after this. They still have Christian Kirk, they have that freshman running back who was there this year, who's pretty good. But you know, I mean, I think they're kind of stuck with like without a grade A. I mean, quarterback who can come in and make plays right away. Defensively, they're okay. So I mean, I think they're just one of the things in another conference. I think they'd be fine, but you put them in the SEC West and they have problems. But some of it is like they. You know, they're kind of like where Auburn is, where they were scrambling for a quarterback, and now they don't really – I mean, they got Kellen Mond coming in. They better hope he's a second coming. So.
Mm-hmm. I lied. One more thing. Who's going to win, Alabama or Clemson?
Clemson.
Oh, John, you fall into the trap as always. I've known you for 26, 27 years now, and we've always danced this little dance where I'll say, John, who's going to win, the Buffalo Bills or the Giants? And you're like, the Bills. I'm like, oh, John. You always pick the loser in these things because you want to see it, and I get it. We wanted to see the Bills win. We want to see Clemson beat Alabama. But I'm more of a pragmatist, right? I mean, well, in everything else you are.
I'm some pragmatism right now.
I was going to say, in everything else you are, but in these picking of games, I always seem to get it right, okay? So what are you seeing that's going to make me change my mind?
Alabama's passing game isn't very good. He's not a good passer downfield.
That's
so
true.
The only way they're going to win is running the ball. And Clemson's defensive line is great. We know this. Clemson's defense is really good.
Yeah.
And Clemson can throw the ball on Alabama. And Clemson is diverse enough on offense and big and powerful enough on offense. I mean, they had freaking, whatever, 45 points against them last year. And now they're not going to do that again. against this defense, but I think Clemson is ready for them, and I think Clemson is peaking right now. I think Clemson's going into that game with a lot of confidence. They have a lot of talent on offense, and I think they feel like Alabama can't cover all their receivers, and they're going to throw the ball and make plays. And I think their defensive line can stop Alabama's running game. And I don't think that the freshman quarterback, Hurts, can throw the ball enough to beat Clemson. That guy last year had a huge game passing the ball, and that's the only reason they won. You know, I mean, he had like 400 yards passing, a bunch of it to the tight end, and I don't think Hurts can do that against Clemson. I think if he has to throw the ball 40 times, whatever, they're going to lose.
Well, I hope you're right. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Clemson Tide, but I certainly like him better than the Crimson Tide, so... But I still feel like – oh, and they got a little distraction too, because Lane Kiffin – did you see the latest thing was that Lane Kiffin not only has been kicked out, he then asked if he could be in the press box, and they told him, no, you can't even be in the press box. Why he wanted to be, I don't know, but I guess just because this is – you know, he's the coach. But hey, they basically said, you need to get your butt down to Florida Atlantic. We're done with you. So I guess Sarkisian, the sock master, is going to come in and – I think he's a character from Tron, actually, is going to come in and run the offense. That can't be a good thing, can it, or can it?
I mean, the game plan for this game was done a month ago.
It was.
The pairings were announced. So,
yeah.
Sarkisian has been a play caller at USC. It was a while ago. He hasn't called plays in a game in a while, but... I mean, he sat there all season and kind of gone through the film study with Kiffin and Saban and listened to their discussions about what they called and what worked and didn't work. So I don't think it's going to – I mean, again, it's a distraction. And I guarantee you if the offense struggles a little bit and they lose, everybody will blame Lane Kiffin. But, you hired Lane Kiffin. What did you think was going to happen?
I just want to point out, I did not hire Lane Kiffin, John.
No, but I'm saying, like, Alabama fans are...
I resent that.
If they lose, they're all going to point and say it's Kiffin's fault that we lost. And I'm going to say, like, look, Kiffin's the reason you won the last two national titles. Like, he trained those quarterbacks, and he got them ready to play, and made them better than they were, and changed the offense in ways that hadn't been done before. So,
well, let's don't get too carried away. He's only won one with them.
Well, but
let's don't give Alabama more national champion. Yeah. That's their job, is to give them more than they've actually won, not us. That's what they do.
But I think he has made their offense far better and more dangerous than it was before. And I think he's going to be missed in terms of quarterback development. So.
And antics and humor. All right. I think we're going to get out of here. Be sure to go by iTunes and leave us a gleaming, glowing 5-star review, even though the audio is crap half the time. Don't forget to check out Lorendo. And while you're at it, there's Decades of Dominance, the Season of Our Dreams. But we want to especially point out you can catch Lorendo at bookstores in Auburn or on Amazon.com, or I think Barnes & Noble probably has it. You can get it from them. So, all right, we're going to get on out of here, this abbreviated show. And, John, I guess this wraps up the 2016 season.
Yeah, let's hope 2017 is better. But, there were some definite fun parts, and I look forward to 2017.
First quarter last night was a lot of fun. I just wish it could have kept rolling. War Eagle John.
War Eagle Ben.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love? When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production. Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. Very cool. Take it easy.
All right, man.
I can go back to say it. Go to bed.
I'm going to bed.
Go to bed.